You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it's The Bigger Picture and I'm Meera Sivasuthi. Addiction to alcohol and drugs is well recognized. It is classified as a substance use disorder. Although compulsive gambling is accepted by the public as an addiction, most medical authorities include it among personality disorders. There are many weirder personality quirks that make the press from time to time. Some are described as evidence of addiction. Others are thought to be manifestations of impulse control disorders. But where does sexual compulsivity or sex addiction fall into all of this? Well, we find out with Dr. John Ben Loy, a licensed marriage and family therapist. Welcome to the show, Dr. John Ben.
Thank you.
What constitutes a sex addiction?
Well, sex addiction can be explained by many different perspectives. For instance, it can be something that is understood chemically, neurochemically, biochemically, I should say, in terms of it. When you are having sex or when you're pursuing sort of routinized sexual behavior, things are taking place in your mind. You're getting a lot of good feel kinds of chemicals that are impacting your brain, like dopamine, for instance, that can explain for how sexual addiction occurs. More recently, now actually, as we speak, the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders, is coming up with a new disorder. It's high time, and it's called hypersexual disorder, which is really another label for what we have been calling in our field sex addiction.
Is it a manifestation of a compulsive behavior disorder, or is it a physiological compulsion associated with adrenaline and risk?
I think that it is can be explained in both ways. It can be something that is very trait-based, as in it is located within the individual and that type of individual, if you will. And it's also something that's physiological, but also social. It's learned behavior, as it were.
Could it be an overdose of dopamine?
Not so much of an overdose. I mean, our bodies do know how to
balance the hormone.
Balance it somewhat, but it's not so much of an overdose as it is a dependence, maybe.
And we often associate this condition with men, but do women suffer from sex addiction?
Yes, increasingly so, especially with the rise of the internet use around the world and the ease of access to pornography. Coupled with, I think, just liberalization of women and their equality, you know, Sex in the City, and it's all about women and sex, right? We didn't get that 20 years ago.
So, women,
I think, are increasingly becoming more and more compulsive in sexual behaviors. There is an author by the name of Marnie Ferry. I'm not quite sure if that's how it's pronounced, but it's M-A-R-N-I-E, Marnie Ferry, F-E-R-R-E-E, who wrote a book called No Stones, Women Redeemed from Sexual Shame. And now she actually she even has a workbook to accompany her book. It's a really good resource for women who struggle with sexual compulsivity.
Now, there is no recommended limit for adults as there is for, say, alcohol. And if there was, would it be different for males and females?
As I had mentioned, that the DSM is coming up with a new disorder called hypersexual disorder. And in the list of criteria, they haven't differentiated the difference between how this disorder presents itself in men or women, just only for adults. So currently, clinically, it's going in the direction of there is no difference. But I personally think that there might be some differences. We just don't know yet.
Okay, so what constitutes normal, average, or healthy sex?
Well, it's hard to say what's normal for a couple. I mean, I think key is the couple's level of satisfaction with their sexual life. So, for instance, a newlywed would find it normal to have sex twice a day. A busy couple might consider having sex once or maybe twice a week to be normal, and you know, for a couple that travels a lot, maybe sex once or twice a month may be normal for them, especially if they incorporate sort of solo, you know, sexual practices when they travel, etc., that sort of thing. Couples can come in and say, oh, we only have sex once a month, but for religious practices or for whatever reasons, they do that, but they feel very close with each other. There are other ways to express express relational intimacy. So it's hard for me to say what's normal, quote unquote, but maybe what I've explained might be some suggestions of normal.
So what? How then would you know it has become an addiction?
Well,
how do you differentiate?
Right. I mean, an addiction is really when a behavior is going out of your own ability to control it. It's something that you fight against and still can't stop yourself.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned earlier that it could be a neurological problem. It could be due to social and cultural influences. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the underlying issues associated with this condition? Could they be personality disorders?
I'm thinking more in terms of disorders such as anxiety or depression, more mood associated rather than personality associated. In a sense, when you say personality disorders, there's actually a whole cluster of disorders called personality disorders. So I don't think that's what you're talking about. You're talking about whether it depends on the individual.
Yes.
Right? So I call that trait. Is it trait-based or is it, you know, something else? There is a certain, to the extent that someone is more likely to be anxious and then acting out their anxiety sexually, yes, you know, it would differ from individual to individual.
So what are the symptoms?
Right. Well, the symptoms and the actual diagnosis of hypersexual disorder, as it's being proposed, is kind of technical, but I'll try to sort of put it in lay language. So basically, they're suggesting that over a period of at least 6 months, recurrent and intense sexual fantasies, sexual urges, and sexual behavior in association with 4 out of 5 different symptoms. So for instance, excessive time consumed by these activities and urges and fantasies, and that these repetitive behaviors or urges are in response to some kind of a dysphoric mood state like anxiety, depression, boredom, etc. Response. These behaviors or urges are a response to life stresses. There's been an effort to try to control or minimize it. Or there has been engagement in the behavior disregarding the risk of physical or emotional harm to themselves or to other people.
And do you think that the internet is making this issue, this problem, or it's compounding hypersexual disorder?
Absolutely. The internet has been called the crack cocaine of pornography. So it's I'm finding increasingly more and more that Malaysians are very unaware of the impact of the internet, and particularly some of the porn issues for children. I'm hearing parents who are wealthier giving their children iPhones with no limit to their access to the internet, computers with internet access in their own bedrooms. These are preteens. They can type out, you know, girl, because they're thinking, oh, I want to find out how girls dress, you know, how other girls dress. Type out girl, and you don't filter out Google search. You get everything. And it's pretty distressing. And I think that Malaysian parents need to be a lot more aware. Coming from a culture that we don't talk about sex, suddenly to a you're wealthy and you want everything Western, including the internet, but between not talking about sex and having the internet as a highway, it's a dangerous place.
Two extremes.
Yes.
How does a child get hooked on to pornography, for an example? How does their mind really work? I mean, they're very young.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they actually relate to this? And then how does that become an issue as they grow older?
I think physically, they're curious. I mean, their bodies are different from adults, so they're curious about what adult bodies look like. And so, you know, being able to have access to this, and then they hear about sex, but they don't really understand it. And so they're watching sex acts on the internet, but it's not appropriate. They are physically not ready for sex, or mentally or emotionally ready for sex until adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
So to expose them to that, well, your question really was, how do they get hooked onto it? Curiosity to begin with, and then experimenting. These are what the adults are doing, so I'm doing it too. And then feeling good about it, but having no guidance over what this is about can really lead to problematic states in the future. a lot of the clients that I see with sexual dysfunction talk about being really addicted to sexual behaviors at an age that's way younger than adolescent years. And you can trace it again and again, the dependence on the sexual behavior as a way to self-soothe or calm can become a problem in the future.
When, of course, you're not in a relationship, I suppose this whole condition of hypersexual disorder isn't a non-issue. Mm-hmm. Now, it's only once you get married, you're committed in a relationship, mm-hmm. that the situation changes. Mm-hmm. Now, in mm-hmm. the aftermath of being caught, mm-hmm. that person has to face the consequences of his or her conduct. Now, mm-hmm. in your experience, mm-hmm. how do you as a therapist help your patients deal with each of these consequences? I mean, we'll start with a broken mm-hmm. relationship. How do you deal with that?
Well, if I could just cycle back to the first thing you said, which was for single people. I actually do work with single people with sexual issues too. So I think we need to realize that the issue is not just for married people, it's also for single people. You can be so compulsive with your sexuality that it can affect your work functioning because you are addicted to porn, you're constantly looking at porn, you're late for work, or you don't fulfill your work assignment, for instance. But yes, I am a marriage and family therapist, and predominantly the clients I see for sexual addiction or compulsivity are couple related. So for marriage issues, first of all, the couple is already in a state of crisis when they found out that, yes, one of the husbands is cheating on them, and it's actually a lot more than just cheating. There's, continual use of prostitutes or paraphilia type dependence. And just to stable the couple first, to help them understand where some of these issues are coming from, if this is a case whereby the husband is the one who's suffering and from the compulsivity and the wife is quote-unquote the victim, to let the wife understand that she has to really to be able to be healthy in herself as the husband is getting help. One of the most powerful ways to help men or individuals through sexual addiction is group work. And I actually started one. I started a men's sexual psychotherapy group, and talking to some professionals, apparently I was told that it's probably the only one available in Malaysia. And we've had two meetings now, and the members have gotten back to me and saying it's really beneficial for them.
What's the difference, between having a group session like this among men, yes. and a couple coming to seek help?
The problem is, so let's use the case whereby the husband is the one who is suffering from the compulsivity. It's hard for the woman to stay there and listen to everything the man has done because it feels like a personal violation. And in many ways, it is. It's an interpersonal violation of their marital contract. But this person is not well. So to help the husband in a group setting where other people are experiencing similar things, but some people have moved on and progressed, gotten better, to be able to tell their stories, their thinking, oh, wow, this really is possible. Because more often than not, the sexual addiction behaviors are done in secret. It's something that's hidden. So coming out and being able to discuss it with other men who understand you, who are not going to judge you, and we're all in it together, really can help demystify and help them to feel like, I can do this. Much different than in a couple situation. I should also have my partner run a support group for the wives.
Yes.
So that they can learn how to be strong. For themselves and also for the relationship while the husband is working through his issue.
What are some of the toughest issues couples have to cope with?
As a therapist, the toughest issue for me is when the wife can't stay. The wife is so upset by the situation that she cannot see this as his issue, and yet want to stay in the relationship to make it work. So for me, the issue really is helping the couple to stay together. Then the wife also needs some help. In terms of sexual compulsivity, it's the same, really. It's just a matter of the degrees of intensity. And helping someone who is moderately hypersexual to severely hypersexual, it's a matter of severity and rather than quality of difference. Oh, something has come to mind. It's when there are children involved. that kills me.
Yeah,
as
course.
A therapist, because mm-hmm. you know, yeah, I don't think I need to say more. You understand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to professional embarrassment. How yes. do you deal with that?
I think professional embarrassment in terms of they've been exposed in their workplace that they have acted inappropriately sexually.
That's right.
Well, it really depends on the professional workplace. Some people in a secular work environment don't really bother it. Especially in Malaysia, it's which is kind of scary. for men, it's like, oh, all men do it, what?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And so for me, the battle here is, well, you know, let's talk about what's healthy. I haven't come across someone who says, well, I'm so ashamed that everybody knows. In the secular workplace, in the religious setting, yes. But in the secular workplace, not so much.
What about social stigma? Not an issue in Malaysia either?
Well, the way I work with clients is I don't, you know, everything's private and confidential. So I think there is some social stigma, but increasingly, I don't know. I almost feel like it's kind of like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, here, on the one hand, people do all kinds of things, and in closed circles, you know, people do all kinds of things. And yet, at the same time, there's this sort of Puritan sort of ethic to our cultures. The stigma is there, but the reality of practices is also there.
Okay.
I don't quite know how to handle that quite yet.
Okay, all right. Tell us when you get to it.
Okay.
Now, with boys accessing internet porn at such a young age, mm-hmm. they're not mature enough to know what they're looking at. And this means they're getting distorted views on what sex is and what healthy relationships are all about.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
If you do find out that your child is, in fact, addicted to mm-hmm. pornography, for an mm-hmm. example, how mm-hmm. do you deal with that?
I think the first step is not to yell at them. The first step is to understand what's going on. And maybe the child has never had a healthy sex talk with a parent. Maybe you as a parent don't know how to have a healthy sex talk with your child. That's the place to begin. That's the first thing. And then secondly, to understand that if your child is already addicted to pornography at a young age inappropriately, we're not talking like 19-year-olds, even then you can help them. An 11-year-old, you have to put some filters and restrictions on the computer and what your child does or does not do. If they're already going all out and doing all this, something is already wrong with their access to this material. So as a parent, as parents, we need to be able to put some filters in place, talk to them about healthy sexuality. And I think, especially in Malaysia, from my experience so far, parents, please educate yourselves about what sexual addiction or hypersexual disorder is all about.
Many also believe that those suffering from personal distress can use hypersexual disorder as a convenient excuse for bad behavior. Well, Tiger
yes.
Woods is one example.
Yes.
Like they claim it's a compulsion beyond your control.
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
I agree that it is a compulsion beyond their control. That's why they do it. I don't like to take a sort of blaming or pathological view on people. I think if people want to do good, they will do good if they're able. That, in short, is kind of how I see it. So Tiger Woods is still human in my mind. That's
okay.
how I see it.
Why do you think that we think it's an excuse?
I think for people who don't suffer the disorder, it's easy to say, well, what's wrong with you? Because I don't suffer from it. I don't do this. So you're just using an excuse. It's a tendency to blame when we don't understand. It's very common. I think before I was trained to become a counselor, I would think that way too. Why is it that person is just doing that? Stop it. It's a simple way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But if they could, they would.
And do you think calling it a disease merely excuses us from having to take a moral view on this?
I think calling it a disease and using it as an excuse is what some people do. If there was no help available, then maybe there is some rationale to that. But there is help available. Calling it a disease is no longer an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
You can get help.
What is the treatment process like?
There are some addiction experts in Malaysia. I also work with sexual addiction. I begin with a history, a comprehensive history and intake of their sexual behavior, and then kind of identify what is associated with their behaviors. Is it anxiety? Is it other things? And then help them to cope with, well, first of all, putting some behavioral contracts down. For instance, no sex with yourself or with any other person except with your spouse, mm-hmm. or sometimes even not even with your spouse for 90 days. So no sexual behavior for 90 days.
Wow.
Yes, that's kind of the cleaning process.
Do they suffer from withdrawal symptoms?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. People fail all the time. In fact, I went through this myself when I was getting trained, and it's tough. But some of the things that come out during the period of fasting, as you will, really opens up your eyes and your understanding as to how these things have fed our fears, our compulsions in very unhealthy ways.
Yeah. And what's the success rate? How long does it take?
It can take a long time depending on where the person is at. If the person is, you know, losing their marriage and their families and is kind of like facing the end of their, you know, all that is looks normal in their life, the change can be faster. For those who are just sort of entering into it, there is still no drastic consequences. The change can be a little bit slower. But if, you know, you've been addicted to sex for 20 years, don't expect to change in 2 days.
Yeah. And how do you stop yourself from falling back into the trap?
A couple things. One is education, understanding what's happening in your body, understanding how to cope with it. Another way is support, and support from a therapist or support or group support, which is why I started this group. I've started having more and more clients, and I think we need a group. So that's a very powerful way to help people.
Your final advice on this issue called hypersexual disorder.
I think it's time that the mental health community begins to understand it, and I hope that this little talk will generate lots of curiosity and people will begin to ask more and more questions and equip themselves with better knowledge so that we can become more integrated, healthy, sexual people.
Start with the children. Thank you very much. Dr. John Benloy, a licensed marriage and family therapist, talking to us about hypersexual disorder, what we call sex addiction, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.